Oh, let's turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes and chapter 8. Ecclesiastes 8. There'll be much of it on the screen, but you might want to follow along in your Bible. You see on the outline that you have in your bulletin that the sermon is called Humility in Life. I thought about a title, Humility and How I Attained It, but I thought maybe, I didn't think about that very long, but that might defeat the purpose. But this sermon is about the humility in life. There are just all kinds of things you can think about when you think about humility. I think about the New England Patriots quarterback, Drew Bledsoe. Remember him? Well, he was on top. I mean, that New England Patriots were going great, and Drew was throwing the passes, and all of a sudden, Drew was hurt or whatever, and another guy came along named Tom Brady. You remember him? And when Drew couldn't get his job back, went on with Buffalo and elsewhere, but he never was the same. He was really high, and then he became humbled very close, very soon. I had it in my own life. Last Sunday night, was it last Sunday? No, two Sunday nights ago. I had the, we had at the end of the Awana, we have the kids come in here, and then one of us has a little story, a little lesson. And it was my turn, and I had the lesson. And I was thinking about, I was teaching them about how Jesus sent the demon out of the demon-possessed man. And I said he went down, and the kids were sitting there, they were listening. Oh, demon possession. I said, and he sent them into the pigs. And I thought, man, I got these people in my hand. And he put them into the pigs, and the pigs ran down and got into the water. First thing you know, one little girl says, that's not fair. That was it. I mean, she, all, the whole time, that's not fair. Well, you know, you deflate your balloon sometimes because she wasn't into that at all. Yeah. They kind of like that, and it's all over. You know, you learn to be humble in those cases. I heard about Tom Selleck. Remember him, Magnum PI? He was on a street in Honolulu, and so a couple came up to him with a camera, and he thought, oh, they want my picture, and he struck the pose. They said, oh, no, we want you to take a picture of us. They apparently didn't know who Tom Selleck was, you know. Humility is like that. It comes on us sometimes, reminded that we ought to be humble. And that's what this lesson is all about, being humble, humility in life. He says first that humility is knowing what you don't know. Knowing what you don't know. How can you know what you don't know? Well, understanding what you don't know is what he's saying. What I'm saying. The first verse says, who is like a wise man who knows the interpretation of a thing? A wise man makes man's wisdom makes his face to shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. The humility, knowing what you don't know, understanding what you are not able to know, not concentrating on what you do know, but all that I don't know. Well, that advances wisdom, advances a man above his peers. That is, who is like a wise man? Nobody's like a wise man. The wise man is up here among his peers. And he can help others with that. Comparison to other men, not to God, but to other men. He has wisdom, the wisdom of God, and that puts him above. It also makes a man useful among his neighbors. He knows the interpretation of a thing. You want some understanding, you go to the wise man. I don't understand this. Will you tell me what this is? And the wise man can interpret it. So he's useful among his neighbors. He's also beautiful. I say that like that, beautiful. In the eyes of his friends. It makes his face shine. Wisdom makes his face shine. Wisdom, he used to have a stern face, apparently, thinking about all the things he couldn't know. Why can I know that? I don't know what this is. How can I know this? Frown. But then wisdom gives him a smile on his face, gives him a pleasant appearance, makes his face shine. He's confident, not in himself, of course, but in God. And wisdom teaches a man about himself. past knowledge, he looks at all of his knowledge, says past knowledge is unchangeable. You know, Paul said, forget those things. You have thoughts about that, about all the things, I wish I had done this, even last week, you know. Oh, why did I say that? Why didn't I do this right, you know? Or last year, or last long time ago, you know. Why did I do that? And you keep concentrating on that. Oh, man, poor old me. I shouldn't have done that. You know what Paul says about that? He says, forgetting those things which are behind, say, and reaching forth to the things that are before. That's what we ought to be doing. So a man's past knowledge, then, is unchangeable. Forget it. Present knowledge is unreachable. Do you know it increases so fast? Knowledge increases. It's hard to keep up with it. When I started teaching, 1965, do you know that at that time, knowledge doubled every 56 years? Now, knowledge doubles every year. Every year, something new. And I'm not surprised. So many things I don't understand. Children understand things I don't understand. How do you fix this? Hand it to a child, you know. How do you work this little blog? Oh, they'll tell you. They're done. Yeah. They can do that. But knowledge just keeps on increasing because it's a global world, you know. And like the global village, we're just all kinds of things from around the world are piled upon us, and we don't know. So present knowledge is just unreachable. And future knowledge is unknowable apart from revelation. We can't know that. But we can with the Word, see. Wisdom helps us to know the things that we can learn. But the man who has wisdom doesn't worry about what he doesn't know. He concentrates on what he does. 1 Corinthians 8, 2 and 3 said this, if anyone thinks he knows anything, he knows nothing as he ought to know it. You know, if you think you know something, you don't know anything as you really ought to know it. But if anyone loves God, this one is known by God. See, what you know is not so important as being known by God. God knows me. You know, you ever have that, some famous person? You know that person? I know him. But you walk up to him and, who is that? Get that guy away from me. He doesn't know me, you know. But if I say, God knows me, you know, that's more important to me than I know God. Of course, the two are the same. But all of that, all this knowledge, knowing what I don't know, that humbles me. Because humility is knowing what you don't know. Humility is also living with what you don't like. The command of the king. We are commanded to obey the king, to observe the laws. You know, Solomon is talking about an absolute monarch. He's not talking about we can write the president and send him an email, you know, and all that kind of thing. Can't do that with a monarch as Solomon was. So he's talking about observing what the king says, period. Now, of course, let me interject something here. That when what the king says disobeys, goes against what the Word of God says, then we have to do what the Word of God says. Humbly, but we have to do it. I think about the in Acts chapter 3 and 4. Remember Peter and John? They walked up to the man. The man was lying at the before the gate called Beautiful. And Peter said, stand up. He stood up and walked. He leaped into the temple, and everybody was amazed. And the people, the leaders, they brought Peter and John in and said, what are you doing? You can't do that. You healed on the Sabbath day. And it's read that sometime. Sit down and read chapters 3 and 4 of Acts and see the irony in the whole thing. They got together, and we learned what they said in that secret meeting. They said, this was a great miracle, wasn't it? That was a tremendous miracle. Who can do that but God? Only God can do that. What shall we do? We don't like them. And so they called him in and said, you can't talk about God anymore. You can't talk about Jesus Christ anymore. How can you do that? Don't do that. Well, and all that, Peter said, wait a minute. You tell me whether it's right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God. You judge. You leaders, you representatives of God, tell me whether I should obey God or you. Irony all over the place. He says, but we cannot but speak of the things which we have seen and heard. So, we observe the laws, he says. But most of us, it's not something real big. The speed limit, the speed limit is too low. Do you know what the Christian speed limit is? The speed limit plus 5. That's the Christian speed limit. I'm doing the Christian speed limit on I-95, and here they go whoosh, right on by me like I'm changing the tire. 95, they're gone. They're 95 on 95. They're gone. I can say to myself, why are they doing that? I can't believe that. What does it matter to me? Do you know, driving 70 miles an hour on I-95, I'm getting there, but I don't have to pass anybody. They all go by me, and I'm just driving. It's easy. You don't have to go in and out. Stay in your own lane. It's a lot easier. Well, anyway, still, that's the law, and we ought to obey the law. So he says, observe the laws. He also says in verse 3a, do not leave the king's service. Don't walk away from service for the Lord, for the king. Don't say, I don't like that. You couldn't walk away from that. You can't say, I quit. Not without a little notice, I'm sure. You can't do it. Don't walk away from the king's service. Support the king. Don't oppose the king. Don't stand against what the king is doing. Don't say to the king, what are you doing? You can't do that. Because he does as he pleases. And if the king does as he pleases, and I have to take it, that makes me humble. I ought to do what I'm told to do, and then be humble about the whole thing. So, don't oppose the king. So, the reason we're to do that, he says, is because of your oath. All citizens are to observe the king as the leader. Even Romans 13 tells them that. And that's not during a democracy. That's when Rome is in power. And Paul says to them in Romans 13, the powers that be are ordained of God. Do it. Listen to them. Obey them. Because of your oath. Because you're supposed to do what God says. And then because of his power. The king's word is power. He has absolute authority. And absolute authority says, I must do what he says or else. So, because of his power, you do what he says. Then also, because of your safety. He says, keep his command, and you'll experience no harm. And then, lastly, because of the time and judgment. People don't know what will happen next. They don't know when it'll happen. So, obey the king whenever. You don't know what's coming next. You don't know what's going to happen to you next. Just obey the king, because that's what you have to do. And that makes me humble. So, humility is knowing what I don't know, living with what I don't like. Also, accepting what I can't change. One of those things that I can't change is death. What? Can't change death. There's no way. He says, no man has power over the spirit to retain the spirit or the authority to over the day of death. There is no discharge of the time in war, and the evil will not deliver those who practice it. Death. You can't escape death. There's an Arabian legend about death. The man, a merchant, sent his servant into the city, the town square there, to buy some things in the marketplace. And he came back. Oh, he was really... obviously afraid, shaken. And he said to the merchantman, Master, let me have a horse. I must leave here. I must go. He said, well, what happened? He said, well, I was in the marketplace, and I was jostled by someone. I turned around, and it was death. And death made a threatening gesture at me. And I got out of there. Now I need your horse. Let me have your horse. I've got to run to Samara and hide there, and she can't find me. So the merchant said, okay, go, and he went off in a gallop to Samarra. And then the merchant went downtown, and he saw the same woman. He saw death. He said, why did you make a threatening gesture against my servant? And she said, I didn't make any threatening gesture. I was surprised. I was surprised to see him here in Baghdad when I have an appointment with him tonight in Samarra. Well, you can't escape it. See, it's gone. Death is a certainty. You can't escape distress. Verse 9 says, all this I have seen and applied in my mind to every deed that has been done under the sun, wherein a man has exercised authority over another man to his hurt. And he will be ruled over by someone. And everyone is ruled over by someone. You notice that? You know, someone tells you what to do. And sometimes it hurts. Sometimes you just don't like that. Well, when that happens, we have to focus on the Lord. Because the Lord never disappoints. We have to assess our life decide what we can change and work at changing it. What can I change? What can I do? Well, if I can change it and work at it. But if I can't, I have to leave the rest with the Lord and trust Him. Otherwise, that distress is going to overwhelm us. And once we do that, once we allow that to do, change what we can, leave the rest with the Lord, then that builds our humility. So, death, distress, deception. Warren Wiersbe says this about verse 10. He says, quote, in verse 10, Solomon reports on a funeral he attended, and the deceased man was a man who had frequented the temple, the place of the holy, and had received much praise from the people. But he had not lived a godly life. Yet he was given a magnificent funeral and an eloquent eulogy, while the truly good people of the city were ignored. Does this sound anything like today? Does it sound anything like a day a while back when two women died at the same time? Two women on the world stage died. Remember? I'll tell you one of them. Princess Diana. Who died the same day Princess Diana died? You don't know. Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa died. What you hear about is Princess Diana. Princess Diana was not a nice person. Oh, she did some good things. But she was, she died in the car with two of her lovers. Tell you something, not one of them was not her husband. So what I'm saying to you is Princess Diana died, so did Mother Teresa. Now I'm not talking about eternal salvation. I don't know about that, about them, but I do know that here they are. One had a life not so great, and the other was a one who had given her life there in Calcutta for all those years, and then every year there's a celebration of that day. What do they celebrate? Princess Diana. Nothing about Mother Teresa. No. Well, that's what he says. This is what happens. People don't pay any attention to that. One story I heard was about a man, a wicked man. Remember how he's a mobster. And these mobsters, they like to give the front about the church, you know. Oh, we're a part of the church. And every time they have some kind of a gathering, oh, the priest is there, you know. And oh, this is a wonderful thing. This man was like that. They're two brothers. And one of them died. And the remaining brother said to the priest, I'd like for you to say in the eulogy that my brother was a saint. And the priest said, brother was a saint? Yeah. So yeah, I'll give you $100,000 for the building program if you'll say my brother was a saint. The priest thought a minute and said, okay. So he took the money, put it in the bank, and then comes the day he has to give the eulogy. So he says, that man there, remember the other brother sitting on the front row, that man there was wicked. He was a liar. He was a cheat. He would do anything. He was no good man. But next to his brother, he was a saint. That's what happened. You know? I mean, there are people who just, they live like the devil, and then they get all that press out of it. See? So this happens all the time. And God lets it happen. See? But remember, God has the master plan in front of him. And we have a little piece. Remember we talked about that last week? A little piece of the puzzle. He has the whole thing. He has it all laid out, and he's saying, okay, do this, this, this. It's all there. See? But that, and he lets that deception go on. And if I trust him and let that go, don't worry about it, then I'm humble. I can be humble about it, and I can be humbled by it. Then there's defiance. Verse 11 says this. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. The defiance of a man. He says, Solomon saw this. It's not every time, but Solomon saw it happen, and it bothered him. And Solomon said, this is what I saw. I saw the wicked prosper. Man's not judged on the spot. He does something terrible, and God doesn't judge him. He said, well, I guess I can get away with that. And he does some more evil, and does some more. And God doesn't judge him. I see the wicked prospering, he says. He gets away with it, continues to do evil, dies at 98. That's what he saw, the wicked. But he also saw the righteous suffering. God does not come to the rescue when things go wrong, but the man trusts him. The man still serves the Lord. And he dies at 58 of inoperable cancer. That's what Solomon saw. And verse 14 summarizes what he said in these verses. He said, this is vanity which occurs on the earth. There are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. And there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. And I said, this also is vanity. Accepting what you can't change is necessary, but that's a humbling experience. But then, whose job is it? It's God's job. It's God's job to take care of those things, the wicked and the righteous. God will work on it. Knowing what you don't know, living with what you don't like, accepting what you can't change, and enjoying what you can't explain. So I commended pleasure, for there is nothing good for a man under the sun except to eat, drink, and be merry. And this will stand by him as his in his toils throughout the days of his life, which God has given him under the sun. Humility is enjoying what you can't explain. Enjoy life. Is that strange? Well, wait a minute. You've been talking about death, distress, deception, defiance. You've been talking about all of that. And now you say to me, enjoy myself? But see, that's the point. In spite of all of this, you can't do anything about those things. Enjoy yourself. This is the fourth time Solomon has told us this in this book. Enjoy yourself. He doesn't want us to be morbid about things. Sure, they're there, but enjoy yourself. Enjoy what God has given you. It's like 1 Timothy 6:17. Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. See? Sometimes we're looking at what we don't have, and that makes us feel bad. What we don't have. It's like Eve in the Garden of Eden. Remember when Satan came to her and says, has God said you can't eat of that tree? And she said, oh, God has told us we could eat of any tree of the whole garden, any of them. She was concentrating on what God said they could do. And he says, what about that tree? Oh, well, God told us not to eat of that tree. Well, don't you want to eat of that tree? That's the best tree in the whole place. Eat of that tree. See, what Satan wants us to do is get concentrating on what we can't have instead of on what we can have. And Solomon is saying, take what God has given you and enjoy it. Enjoy life. Instead of trying to do God's job for him, Let God be God, and then enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself with what he's given. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your friends. Be sociable. Enjoy life. And as I did that, I thought, aha, the Serenity Prayer. I know what it is. Niebuhr is given credit among 1,000 other people, all the way back to Aristotle, on the Serenity Prayer. You know it. It's the, but don't get ahead of me now. The Serenity Prayer says, Lord, grant to me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Stop. Don't go back any farther. Accept the things I cannot change. Look at something. Now, can I do anything about that? If you can't change it, then have the peace of mind and the wisdom to accept what you can't change. I can't change that. That's the way it is. I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to enjoy what God does give me. I will change it if I can. So that's the next one. Have the courage to change the things I can. Oh, can I change that? Well, I could, but I don't want to do that. No, no. Have the courage to change what I can change. Some things I can't change, leave them there. Some things I can change, I will change them. I'll work on it to do it, and I need courage to do that. And then the wisdom to know the difference. See? These things I cannot change. I don't have any answers for that. I can't change them. These things over here I can change, and I'm working on changing them. Now, in the middle, though, I have to say, now, here's a new thing. Does that go in that pile or in that pile? See? I have to decide. I need wisdom to do that. So, humility is knowing what you don't know, living with what you don't like, accepting what you can't change, enjoying what you can't explain, and then, finally, 16 and 17, discovering what you can't discover. He's talking about three things here, I think. In verse 16, the effort of man. He says, when I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day and night. In other words, work as hard as you can, work day and night, as long as you want, look, trying to discover what God does, you'll never know. You'll never learn. You can't discover all of it. You can discover some things, and you ought to discover what you can, but you can't discover everything. You just can't do it. But when you do discover something, it's great. You know, you get excited about it. Do you think that eternity is going to be sitting around strumming on a harp with the wings or whatever? No, not that. What's eternity going to be? Eternity is going to be finding out things about God. Wouldn't that be great? Because he's infinite, we'll never know all there is to know about God, though we'll live millions and millions of years with him. Never make it. But when you find something, that's going to be a wonderful thing. I heard that Kenneth Wiest, who was the Greek instructor and quite famous at Moody, and they tell me that he would be working in his office, and he would discover something in his Greek New Testament, and he'd run out the door, and the first person he saw, he would grab and say, did you know this? The Bible says this right there in this verse. He'd get all excited about it. Do you think heaven's going to be exciting? I think we're going to learn something about God every day, every 5 minutes maybe. And every time we do, we get, oh, wow, isn't that something? Did you know this? Did you hear? Yeah, I heard that yesterday. Oh, okay. Whatever, we're going to be learning about God. It's going to be exciting, finding out what God does. Maybe, we'll find about something about what happened in this life. You know, we learned this about God, and God said, and that's what I was doing back there in 2008. That's what I was doing in Twin Lakes Baptist Church. Oh, that's what you were doing. See? Discovering about God. But that's the eternity. We can't do that now. Right now, we discover what we can because we'll do all we can, learn what we can. Later, we'll learn more. Then he talks about the work of God in 17a. Then I saw all the work of God that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. Because the work of God is so vast, I think he's saying. We can't discover all that's done. Eternity, we'll discover, and we'll see what God has done. But then, the inability of man, verse 17b, for though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not discover it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not find it out. It will have to be revealed by God, I think is what he's saying. So, neither through great labor nor through great wisdom will a man discover all that there is to know about God and his program while he's here on the earth. Pascal, the French philosopher, said a big paragraph, and I got out of it, and I hope this is what he was saying. This, if God were partially hidden, then man could not know his sin. If God were partially hidden, if man were not partially hidden, then man could not know his sin. If God were not partially hidden, because man would know everything God knows, he wouldn't know anything bad about himself, so he wouldn't know it. But then the other side of it is, if God were totally hidden, then man would have no hope to get rid of his sin. I think that's what he said. God has given just the right mixture of revelation and mystery to our life, and we need to enjoy it. And humility simply acknowledges the gap that exists between God and us, and does not try to go beyond the place where God has stopped us. Well, that's humility, as Solomon saw it. Are you humble yet? Don't say yes. You ruined it. You know? He says, humility is knowing what you don't know, living with what you don't like, accepting what you can't change, enjoying what you can't explain, discovering what you can't discover. And most of us will be humble by that. In fact, most of us, as Yogi Bear said, have a lot to be humble about. You know, this whole thing started, this whole Christianity, our salvation started with humility. Paul talks about it in Philippians chapter 2. He says that Jesus was in the form of God, and he thought being in the form of God and being equal with God not something to be grasped, to hang on to, but he emptied himself of his the use of his attributes, and then took the form of a servant, and becoming in the likeness of a man, and being found in appearance as a man, here it is, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even to death on the cross. Now, was Paul trying to give us a lesson in Christology? No. Nah. Because he started out in verse 5 by saying this, let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ. See? Let that mind be in you. Humble. Humble to the even death on a cross. And that's what he's saying to us. Let this mind be in you, and you will be exalted in due time.